south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, here's some hot news that just came in from Mr. B. Yeah, the famous Mr. B. Our man in Guatemala who teaches English online to Chinese kids. So, obviously, he'd be the man to talk about what's really happening with the coronavirus since he's talking to those kids sitting right there in the thick of it every day. And you know, since these days the catchphrase is fake news, just how much of that coronavirus crap is fake news? Or anything you hear about the economy, politics, climate change, any of that crap. Well, at least we have Mr. B who's got a direct pipeline to China. And what about the coronavirus in Latin America? You know, everyone's talking about it. You can't avoid the news. It's everywhere. But so far, no cases, or at least I haven't met anyone who knows someone who's been in contact with the virus. But this thing's just getting started, so it's coming. Time will tell. Anyway, back to Mr. B. He says, I've had 4 students now who speak really good English that tell me the name of the coronavirus is really neo-corona-pneumonia. That's what they're calling it in China, anyway. Neo-corona-pneumonia. Of course, people die from pneumonia all the time, and usually it's from a virus. Up in the States, we call it a virus anyway. But the reason I'm writing this to you today, Johnny, is in case you want to talk about the so-called coronavirus on your show. I want to inform you on the impact it's having with my job of teaching Chinese children English online. So then what impact has this virus situation had on my job? None. Absolutely zero effect. Turns out, Johnny, the kids are not able to go back to their brick-and-mortar schools, and their parents are desperate for their children to learn something, anything, because, you know, there's lots and lots of competition for education and grades in China. That's the goal. But what about the impact of that virus? Well, it's like this. The time slots that I have for students are 30 minutes. My company allots 30 minutes per class. And I've had a couple of my students cancel their time slot, but it's been filled up right away by another student whose teacher had called in sick or something. I'm okay with being a substitute in case the teacher's out. That's always a good option if you want to make even more money. But I personally am booked. I rarely have any open slots. In fact, he says the demand for online English teachers like me is very high right now because of the virus, causing my company to even extend winter hours, and they're asking teachers to open even more additional time slots for students if they can. Like I said, Johnny, their parents are desperate for their children to learn something, anything, anything. Because you see, in China, it's all about getting a leg up on the other guy. You wouldn't believe the competition among these kids. And are they serious about it? However, about that virus, I personally think it's a man-made pneumonia virus. And I believe the Chinese government wants more of their people to be home prisoners instead of out on the streets talking to each other. And I have that sneaky feeling the U.S. government wants the same for its people. Though I could be wrong, I wouldn't count on it. Anyway, Johnny, that's my little report about the coronavirus from the trenches. I'm on it, Johnny. More stories to come. Signed, Mr. B. All right, thanks for that update, Mr. B. Keep those cards, letters, and emails coming. And it is good to know that virus situation in China has not negatively affected you guys out there teaching English to Chinese students online. And in the end, who would have thunk that the virus itself would have kicked up the demand for teachers like you? Every cloud has a silver lining and all that, I guess. Oh, and as far as that last show I did on how to get rid of those nasty cucarachas, been getting a lot of feedback on that show. Seems like there are plenty of people up in the States with the same problem. Infestations. For example, this email comes from Mitchell. He says, Johnny, I learned a while ago that a common sneaky way to which you end up getting cockroaches in the home is from cardboard boxes that packages come in, especially boxes of food, of course. Now, Johnny, roaches love to lay their eggs inside crevices in those cardboard boxes. So watch out for those packages from Amazon. My advice, get rid of those boxes quick, even before you get them in the house. All right, thanks for that, Mitchell. All good advice. Now, I have to tell you, Of all the thousands of emails I've been getting over the years, once in a while I get emails from people addressing what they call my poor attitude. That'd be, of course, my on-air attitude, especially when it comes to politicians and other scumbags. Now, I have to admit that most people agree with my assessment 100%, but I do get the occasional person who says, Johnny, really, how could you be so hard on politicians? There have to be some good ones out there. And isn't it true that if you get a really honest, smart, persevering person in there, perhaps he or she could really affect some changes, even turn it around? That's right. Yep, I get emails from people who say, Johnny, we all know the system's broken, but any system can be fixed. So, yes, I get emails like that. What can you say to that? Anything's possible, I guess. But just recently, I came across a brilliant article that explains in mathematical terms why it'll never get fixed. And after reading and letting these words sink in, you just know there's no hope for the system. It's doomed. The U.S. truly is making its last few swirls around the edge of the toilet. So let me just read a few excerpts here and you'll see what I mean. The title of the article is, What Are the Odds of Getting a Good Leader? This is a new article, just came out. First, he gives us a premise. The premise is, the larger the country, the less likelihood of getting a leader who can be trusted with the job. That is the premise. Then he says, on the surface, this premise would seem to be an illogical claim, because surely the size of a country has no bearing upon whether the leadership is competent, trustworthy, etc., and yet that's very much the case, and mathematics can prove it. Then he said, this is due to a combination of conditions that can be found in every country. Studies have long revealed that in any population, roughly 4% or 1 in 25 people will display significant sociopathic traits. These traits are as follows. Number 1, glibness and superficial charm. Number 2, manipulative and cunning. 3, grandiose sense of self-worth. 4, pathological lying. 5, lack of remorse, shame, or guilt. 6, shallow emotions. 7, incapacity for real love. 8, continuous need for compliments. 9, continuous need for stimulation. Now I wonder who could best serve as a poster boy for those traits. How about Bill Clinton? But I digress, though, not too much. Anyway, it says, picture the leading politicians in your own country. Not just Trump, either. The top dogs of any party. Whether you support or oppose this individual, he or she is very likely to possess these traits. So then why should it be that sociopaths rise to the top in politics? The answer, quite simple. First, those with these pathologies are likely to be drawn to jobs that allow for self-aggrandizement and minimal consequences for actions taken, plus considerable rewards, both in income and power. Second, a sociopath will have fewer scruples than others, so he'll be prepared to do whatever it takes to gain office, while others, more likely to have a conscience, will have limitations as to how far they'll go to succeed. That suggests that the 4% of sociopaths will not only be more attracted to a career in politics, they'll be likely more successful. And of course, we know this to be true, as we commonly note the above traits when describing almost any specific politicians. But why then are sociopathic politicians more likely to occur in a larger country than a smaller one? We can prove this with two examples. Take a country that's small, a population of, let's say, only 65,000. That means only about 20,000 of those people can legally run for office. That is, they are adults, born in the country, etc. If you take 4% of that population, that translates to 800 potentially bad actors out of a possible 20,000. Now, if only 1 in 100 of those bad actors actually pursued politics, that means that at any given time, the country might have 8 pathological types rising to the top of politics. And based on the knowledge of them as individuals, I'd say that's a kind of a universal number in what we have at any given time. Now, in that country, for example, if there are 50 senators, only 8 sociopaths in the mix represents well less than 1/4 of the total legislature. So even those 8 out of 50 can possibly be dealt with. That is, they're bad, sociopathic, and corrupt ideas, overridden or neutralized. However, in example 2, let's look at the U.S., a much larger country of 327 million people. And with that fixed 4% sociopathic rate, that gives us 13 million sociopaths that have the potential to rise to the top. That's 13 million. That's a hell of a lot of people for a country with only around 650 top-level political positions. That'd be Congress plus the president and the cabinet, etc. And remember, the most pathological people are the ones that are likely to work the hardest to succeed. So if we simply do the math, we recognize in all likelihood an individual in a senior political position, that would be state representatives on up, statistically speaking, would be pathological personalities. Because you see, there's no doubt about it. That 13 million sociopath number is simply overwhelming. Nearly all of them with a burning desire to hold one of those 650 top positions in the country. The math does not lie. While conceptually, your mind probably recoils, that is, unless you're a sociopath yourself, at the thought of so many millions going after 650 top jobs, the truth is, the numbers illustrate that it's not only possible that sociopaths do fill most of these 650 jobs. The math also shows that it's extremely likely. Small wonder, then, that on the odd occasion we see a highly principled individual throw his hat into the ring, he's almost always trounced in the primaries. And should he actually obtain office, he's likely to last only a term or two before he's had enough of the swamp. He either drops out or becomes a swamp creature himself. The latter being the more likely case because the perks are just so damn good. And of course, this is a fact we've all observed on occasions when a truly admirable candidate does appear on the scene. Bottom line, if we step back and assess the mathematics of what this means, the system itself, of course, has failed. It's a failed system to start with. How could it be anything else? It's not intended for the system to work for the betterment of the electorate. It's meant to serve the rulers, whose majority has always been, according to the maths, sociopaths. So over the years, the system has been finely tuned to their needs, which leads us to an even more unsettling conclusion. Since the system is populated by pathological individuals, they have no intention of ever rectifying the problem, no matter what rhetoric they give you. Regardless of party affiliation, they are, in fact, the problem. The worst of problems, to us, that is, because to them, there's no problem at all. And by extension, it means that the problem cannot be fixed without employing Thomas Jefferson's solution of throwing them all out periodically and starting fresh from the beginning. In fact, here's the Jefferson quote. He says, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of those ends, the ends being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government." Those are Thomas Jefferson's words. But the fact is, these days, to really see the halls of state cleansed of bad actors and sociopaths, we recognize that nothing short of a revolution will bring about Thomas Jefferson's resolution. And that ain't gonna happen. Even if we were to think a revolution was justified, very few of us would wish to see the economic and political devastation that would be sure to accompany it, at least in the short term. So we let the sociopaths have their way. We let them rule. And hope in most ways we can get on with our lives without too much government interference. All right. I know what you're thinking. What the hell does all that have to do with living, working, playing, and or doing business in Latin America? Well, there's an easy answer to that, of course. Either choose to live in a system that's completely controlled by Big Brother sociopaths who monitor your every move and control every little aspect of your life. You can choose to live in a place where you commit 3 felonies a day and don't even know it. You can choose to bank in a place where the government can lock up your account with a simple phone call. You can choose to live in a place where you're paying more than 50% of your income in combined taxes. And if you don't believe that, I'll send you a report that proves it. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. So then what's the alternative to being under the thumb of Uncle Sam and Big Brother the rest of your life? Well, you get that plan B underway. Vote with your feet and get the hell out of Dodge. Sure, if you end up in Latin America, which I highly suggest, their leaders are definitely sociopaths too. However, there's one big difference. they're sociopaths on manana time. It pretty much says it all, doesn't it? Not to mention, Latinos not only hate their own government, they do everything in their power, legal and otherwise, to avoid paying taxes or having any involvement with their governments at all. In other words, they see their government not as their friend, but as their enemy. And those that govern know this, so they never push their people too far. Except, of course, in those few cases, they've actually gone hardcore socialist, like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Bolivia, and Ecuador. And that's sure working out well, isn't it? So the question is, how's your plan B coming? Oh, and that reminds me, I do a lot of phone consults, you know, mostly with people who are somewhere along on their plan B and they need some guidance and advice. And you know, it's a funny thing. Most of them, I'd say even 90% of them, have admitted to me that they're what you might call failed or disillusioned preppers. And many of them have admitted they were preppers for a long time. Some started 10, even 20 years back. Stockpiling stuff in that certain little corner in the basement, thinking a grid-down scenario or Armageddon's right around the corner. But now, 10 or 20 years later, that food in the basement's going past its due date, and, well, that enthusiasm for prepping is on the wane. And I imagine every time you walk downstairs and do an inventory, brush the dust off and check the expiration date, you're probably wondering if it was the right thing to do, probably even feeling a bit foolish sometimes. You're thinking if friends and family knew about it, they'd probably think you were nuts. Well, you know, there's really nothing wrong with prepping. It is a good idea. Hey, the Mormons are all in on it for at least a year. In fact, my own sister's one of those. No, not a Mormon, a prepper. But now, she's an enlightened prepper. There's a difference, you know. And you know, she's like so many longtime preppers who've graduated or were enlightened to the realization that it ain't gonna cut it in the long run. Sure, it'll get you over the hump in a small disaster that lasts a couple of days or even a couple of weeks, but it appears that what we're in for is going to be really nasty and long-term. An economic, financial, or environmental blowout just unequaled in modern times. At least, you know, in the Big Depression, when half the country was out of work, there was really only one degree of separation between city folks and a relative or two living on a farm. So at least during the Depression, people could eat. But, you know, these days, that's not the case at all. In the coming blowout, when that reset button gets hit, well, let's just say that's why you want to have a plan B. Because, you know, if you're in Latin America, every city dweller is one degree of separation away from a family or a friend who lives on a farm. That's a sustainable model. Prepping is not. Prepping is just a short-term insurance policy. Having a cousin or brother who owns a little farm, that's a long-term lifeline. So there are literally tens of thousands of people like my sister who've got a corner in the basement just chock full of stuff that's reaching its expiration date. Luckily, she's got some gold and silver, and that won't spoil or go bad. And now that her kids are grown and out of the house, she's wisened up and is disillusioned with long-term prepping and is well along in her plan B now, too. Hey, but you gotta start somewhere, and prepping is a very good first step. At least if you're a prepper, you're no longer fooling yourself into thinking everything's gonna be all right. And when the crap hits the ventilator, all you gotta do is dial 911. Good luck with that. All right, changing gears again, let's talk about extortions here in Latin America. You know, if you live down here and you mingle with the locals and you speak Spanish, you'll hear stories and read stuff in the paper. You'll hear about people who occasionally get extorted. Now, I'm not talking about police extortions. I'm talking about being extorted when you're in business. So what's that all about? Well, think of the protection rackets you used to hear about or see depicted in Hollywood gangster flicks where someone named Knuckles, Tony Snake Eyes, or Johnny Bagels would show up every week to collect an envelope. And the collector, the guy picking up the envelopes, was known as the Bag Man. Not the envelope man, but the Bag Man. Now, you know, I've been down here in Latin America something like 30 years now. And yes, I've heard extortion stories, but I've never heard a single extortion story coming from gringos and expats who own businesses as long as their businesses are on the gringo tourist trail, slightly on the gringo tourist trail, or in middle or upper middle class neighborhoods and business districts. In other words, if you want to hear extortion stories, just go to the places I never recommend you live, work, play, and or hang out. I mean, really, why do you think I give you the heads up on those places? Now, that's not to say that gringos and expats don't, on occasion, open businesses in undesirable areas like that. Why? Because the rent there is so damn cheap. We're talking backpacker and cheapskate heaven. I mean, for example, in a crummy, lower middle class, scruffy neighborhood, you could probably get a really spacious two-bedroom apartment for around $150 to $200 a month. Sure, sounds great, but along with that, there are some negatives. Like, for example, you probably won't have water 24/7. That's a big problem. And you'll probably have a couple of power outages a week for a half hour or so. And though it may be safe enough to walk around during the day, at night, I wouldn't chance it. And chances are the locals that have little businesses there, and there are businesses everywhere in Latin America. Doesn't matter what district or neighborhood, seems like every corner's got its little tienda, bakery, and pinchazo. That's a tire repair joint. And in the nicer neighborhoods, they're left unmolested by the bad guys. Because the gangs and no-good-nicks stick to the crummy neighborhoods that they themselves live in. And remember, the nicer the neighborhood, the better it's policed. Personally, in all the time I've been down here, I've only spoken to a few businessmen who've been extorted. And I've never met a gringo or expat businessman who've been shaken down. Only local businessmen in crap neighborhoods. In fact, some years back, I had a girlfriend whose father owned a hardware store. And one day, when the place was closed, a note was slipped under the door that said there was a new protection tax to be paid. I think in that case, it was something like $20 every 2 weeks. So yes, bottom line is I've seen and heard of extortion rackets, but never in high-end, even middle-class or business districts in decent neighborhoods. But, you know, lately, here in Latin America, there's been a new twist on the extortion racket. Fact is, it turns out that more than half of all the extortion phone calls originate from a single place, most likely the closest Latin American prison. Yep, you heard right. In this case, we're not talking about the note under the door that says pay up every couple of weeks. We're talking about getting a phone call that says pay up every couple of weeks. A paper and pencil's old school. These days, it's all done by WhatsApp. By the way, how do you think the bad guys get people's phone numbers to extort money from? Because Latinos make absolutely no effort to maintain their privacy and give their phone numbers and WhatsApp numbers to everyone, including all their email addresses, Facebook, and Instacrap logins, names, and handles, too. So anyway, as mentioned, the most recent data shows that most extortion phone calls are coming from a prison. So then how do the cops and investigators know extortion calls are coming from prisons? Most often the local prison nearest the prospective victims? Well, that's because in every prison there are a number of raids and inspections that take place throughout the year where they clean everyone out of their cells and they check for contraband. For example, there's a recent case in Guatemala where a massive search of the Cantel prison, they turned the place upside down, back in July of 2019, about 6 months ago, which involved over 1,200 cops. They uncovered over 200 phones and chargers with lists of hundreds of names and numbers of businesses in the local area. And get this, in November, just a couple months ago, Guatemalan police spokesperson Pablo Castillo told the press that one particular individual prisoner residing there, one David Quinteros Lopez, El Tijeras. In English, David the Scissors Lopez was found to be coordinating about 200 extortion calls a day, along with three other prisoner buddies. You got that? Just one guy and his two buddies, 200 calls a day. And their modus operandi was to call companies and threaten to hurt or murder their staff if they did not comply. However, this guy in his little prison game never intended to hurt anybody. They had no connections or muscle outside the prison. And there's a lot of guys like that. They're called copycat extortionists with little or no connection to real gangs or thugs that can actually do any harm to anyone. So what they do is exploit businessmen who fear extortion by real gangs, and they make phone calls posing as gang members. Now, according to investigators, copycat extortion is a new game. And it's showing up in every Latin country, and almost all of them are working out of prisons. According to very recent statistics, 70% of all extortion calls come from prison, and 80% of those are from copycats who pose as gang members but have no power or authority or muscle to back up their threats. They're just counting on the fear factor. And according to stats, these copycat extortionists are extremely successful in collecting dough. For example, the article says last August, authorities obtained a list from just one person in jail who had extorted over $36,000 from private businesses over the phone with the extortionist, the cold caller, not having a single connection to any of the gangs like MS-13 or Barrio 18. Turns out he was just a very successful cold caller. And with his calling skills and technique, he made a killing. So again, the bottom line is, authorities estimate that 90% of extortion calls from telephones, which is the most common method these days, are from imitators or copycats just trying to hit the jackpot. Kind of like the Latino version of the Nigerian Prince in Exile scam. I don't get it. How come I keep getting emails from so many exiled Nigerian princes with millions of dollars in locked up funds they want to share with me? How'd I get so lucky? Meanwhile, we've got some wild and crazy news out of Brazil. Here's an article just came out of Brazil entitled Gay Jesus Comedy Reinstated on Netflix After Brazil's Supreme Court Reverses the Lower Court Ban. The title is great. Anyway, the article says, the president of Brazil's Supreme Court authorized Netflix to show a comedy that depicts Jesus as gay after a lower court banned it. By the way, this comes from the Brazil state news agency, Agência Brasil. It says the movie, which is named The First Temptation of Christ, has prompted outrage in Brazil, home of the world's largest Catholic population. Then it says, since the movie's released last month, millions of people have signed an online petition to have the film removed from Netflix. Not only that, on Christmas Eve, four men were involved in an attack on the headquarters and offices of the group that made the movie. So in effect, they've got two judges with two different rulings. One says that the satire has the power to undermine the values of Christian faith. And then they've got another judge who ruled that no movie, even a gay Jesus movie, can bring down the church, since the Catholic Church has weathered more severe storms in its 2,000-year history. So for now, you can watch it. But since the Supreme Court's ruling is described as provisional, the movie could still be banned at any time. Now, Netflix, which described the 46-minute film as a Christmas special that's gone wrong, they've expressed their support for the group producing the film and its artistic sensibilities and values. Meanwhile, the ensuing publicity has propelled the ratings for this gay Jesus comedy to new heights. Very interesting, but I still don't want to see it. How about you? All right, we're getting to the end of the show now. I just want to give you a heads up once again as to my new website. It's expatplanb.com. Check it out. That's where you'll find my Latin American healthcare report. It's new and revised in more than 100 pages, and something you're absolutely going to need. Because at whatever stage you are in your Plan B, you will absolutely need to know about doctors, clinics, hospitals, and Latin healthcare insurance. Check it out at expatplanb.com. And also, in a few weeks' time, I'll be putting up some details about my upcoming Expat Insider Seminar. My next week-long event in Central America will be in July 2020. I'll keep you posted. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.